If you have your Bible, I hope that you do. I invite you to open to Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5. Lord willing, we'll be studying from Galatians 6 tonight. And we'll be in Galatians for our study tonight. But this morning, we're just going to look at one passage here in chapter 5 and then get to other places. I think if we stopped and thought about it, we would be surprised at the number of choices that we make every single day. If we really stopped to think about the number of decisions that we make in the course of just one day, we would be surprised at how many that we make. Some of those decisions are unimportant. Do I wear blue jeans or khakis? You know, that really doesn't matter. It's just a very unimportant decision that just doesn't have very many consequences with it. But there are other decisions that we make that are critically important. And I think we understand that. Those critically important decisions, those are the ones that we make that have the greatest consequences, either for good or for bad. And those consequences can perhaps be eternal. So as we try to make godly decisions, what is it that guides us? As we go throughout every single day, making choices, making some choices that are of considerable importance. What guides us as we try to make godly decisions? Now, I think that you know that the New Testament is not a book of legal code. And so when we are faced with some decision, it's not as simple as just saying, okay, can I or can I not engage in this? Well, let's see. Let me open my New Testament and let's see. According to Article 7, Section 4, Paragraph C, nope, I can't do this. It doesn't work like that. The New Testament was not written that way. Really, what we have in the New Testament are guiding principles. And God gives us concepts that we take and we have to apply those properly. And so with those principles that guide us in our decision-making process, we make godly decisions. I want to suggest to you that the decision-making process is a process. It's not just a one-step process either. And this morning, I want to suggest to you that there are four questions that we need to consider in this process. Now, these are not the only four questions, but these are four, I think, of the most pertinent ones. So let's talk about four decisions that we make, four questions, rather, that we must ask as we try to make godly decisions. Number one, is this forbidden? Is this activity that I am considering engaging in, is this forbidden anywhere in Scripture? Is this action forbidden either explicitly or implicitly? If an action is explicitly forbidden, then really we just strive in futility to try to get around that. There are some actions that the New Testament explicitly says, do not do this. Now we can hem and haw and try to get around it however we want, but it's just not going to happen. An explicit statement is an explicit statement. But it's not usually the explicit statements that we struggle with. It's more the implicit ones, the ones that require some wisdom, some application, some discernment. I had you open to Galatians chapter 5 because in this passage we see both explicit and implicit actions that are forbidden. Look with me in chapter 5 and verse 19. You're familiar with this passage. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident. Which are? These are the explicit ones, the evident ones. Immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing. You know, those are the explicit ones. And we can say, well, you know, I just disagree. I don't think drunkenness is all that bad, and I'm going to engage in that. Well, that's fine. You can do that. But you're not going to be able to stand before God and say, you know, your instructions just really weren't that clear. That's an explicitly forbidden action. But look at the final expression that ends this listing of sins. Verse 21, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these. Now, we've talked about this passage before, and we've talked about applying wisdom and discernment. what are the things like these? That's the implicit. That's the thing that Paul says, now, use your common judgment, use your good sense, and think about it. There are other things that you just should not engage in. Now, they're not clearly spelled out for us here, but Paul says we have the wisdom to figure this out. So what does this include? Well, let me suggest to you a few modern behaviors that the Bible does not explicitly address. What about the use and abuse of narcotic drugs? What about marijuana use? Heroin, cocaine, methamphetamines, any other kind of strong drug that has become very prevalent in our modern society. They didn't have those things in the first century, at least not to my knowledge. You're not going to find a passage that explicitly says, thou shalt not use narcotic drugs. Thou shalt not use these hard drugs. There's no passages like that. But does the Bible condemn the use of those things? Well, of course it does. How? It does that implicitly. This is one of the great features of the Bible, one of the great qualities of the Bible. It is timeless in its application. This book was written 2,000 years ago, but it still speaks to modern day problems. Do you think people in the first century had access to substances that would alter their minds, that would alter their mental state, their mood, and their sobriety? Do you think they had access to things like that? Obviously they did. You can go back and read in the history. In fact, you can even read in some places in the Bible where you can see that they had access to substances like that. There's no doubt about that. Now, they weren't using the same things that we use, but they sure had their own substances. Now, what passages, what principles would guide us in showing us that these things are forbidden? Let me share with you one in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Excuse me for coughing. I'm probably going to do that a lot this morning, so just bear with me. But 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, look with me at verse 6 beginning. So then, let us not sleep as others do, but let us be, notice, alert and sober. For those who sleep do their sleeping at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we are of the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet, the hope of salvation. Now, this passage specifically mentions drunkenness, but he does say, let us be alert, let us be sober. We need to be of good judgment. We need to be able to use our minds properly. The command to be sober, to be alert, does that not implicitly forbid any mind-altering, mood-affecting substance that we might put into our bodies? And the obvious answer to that is yes. So these modern inventions, they're all implicitly forbidden in the Scriptures because of these principles about sobriety and alertness and good judgment that God has given to us. Now, I think this is probably the easiest question that we have to ask ourselves when we are considering some course of action. What's the second question? Number two, will this offend my conscience? Is this action, if I participate in this action, is this going to offend my conscience? There are some activities, even harmless, sinless activities, that people cannot engage in simply because their conscience or their scruples will not allow them to do it. Now, you probably know this, but the passage that I'm turning to is Romans chapter 14. Romans chapter 14. Look with me at the end of the chapter, the last two verses. Romans 14, verse 22, beginning. The faith which you have as your own conviction before God. Happy is he who does not condemn himself in what he approves. But he who doubts is condemned if he eats, because his eating is not from faith, and whatever is not from faith is sin. Now, there is a context here, and we could spend an entire week studying this context. We don't have time to get into all of that. But the point remains we should not do that which we cannot do from faith. That which we cannot do without having any personal doubts or concerns about the rightness of that activity or the wrongness of that activity. The actions that are under consideration in Romans 14, they're not sinful actions. These are actions that are approved by God. In fact, the text explicitly says these two men under consideration, the one with strong faith and the one with weak faith, both of them are accepted by God. God would not accept them if they were doing something sinful. So these men are involved in things that are not wrong. But one man simply cannot bring himself to participate. Among those of you who are older, I suspect some of you grew up in homes where you were forbidden to go to the movie theater. Some of you probably grew up in homes where you were forbidden to play card games of any kind, not just gambling, where money was involved. Of course, that was wrong, but even go fish was wrong. You just didn't play cards. Now, you've gotten older and you've looked at those games and you've said, you know, there's really nothing wrong about those card games. And you know, there's really nothing inherently sinful in going to the movies. Depending on what movie you're going to see, of course, but if you're going to watch some clean, family-oriented movie, there's nothing inherently sinful about that. And you know that. But because of your upbringing, because of the way that you were taught as a child, you just can't shake that. And somebody comes to you and says, hey, do you want to play Rook? I can't play card games. I know there's nothing wrong with it, but I just can't bring myself to do it. It would offend my conscience. You want to go to the movies? I don't feel real good about that. I was taught as a child not to go to the movies. I know, but I just can't bring myself to do it. Any activity that would violate your conscience to participate in is an activity that you need to avoid. All right, now here's the third question. Will this encourage sinful behavior within me? There are some things that we should not do because we are smart enough to know that temptation is inevitable. I know that if I do this, I'm going to be tempted. And so will this activity encourage sinful behavior within me? There are some people that we need to avoid because we know that they will inevitably tempt us. I'm going to Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4, and this just speaks directly to this question. Is this going to encourage sinful behavior in me? Proverbs 4 talks to us about people who will inevitably tempt us. Proverbs 4, verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not proceed in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it, and pass on. For they cannot sleep unless they do evil, and they are robbed of sleep unless they make someone stumble. There are certain people that we should avoid. And Solomon here says we need to have the foresight and the forethought to know I need to avoid those people because they will inevitably try to tempt me in some way. Not only are there people that we need to avoid, there are places that we should avoid. A recovering alcoholic should not go to the bar. That's just not wise. Temptation is inevitable. Somebody tempted by lust shouldn't go to a strip club. That's pretty obvious. Here's one that's not so obvious. Somebody who's tempted by lust might not even go to the gym in some cases. You're going to see women who are dressed in clothing that is not appropriate, and it is intended to attract your eyes to the features of their body. And if you struggle with lust, it might not be wise for you to go to the gym. If you struggle with covetousness or overindulgence, Black Friday shopping might not be the best thing for you. And you need to have the foresight to know there are places I don't need to go to. You remember Matthew 26:41? Jesus was with his disciples and he said to them, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Our spirit may want to do the right thing, but the flesh can break down our own defenses. So there are people we need to avoid. There are places that we need to avoid. I want to suggest to you, thirdly, that there are events that we need to avoid, if those events will tempt us from doing evil. And I'm going to tread lightly on this point here, because I'm afraid I may be stoned to death after I finish this sermon. I say that jokingly, of course. At least I hope that's not in your heart after you hear what I have to say. But here's an event that could possibly lead us into temptation. Sporting events. I want you to think about this with me. Sporting events have the potential to bring out the worst in some people. Have you noticed that? I'm sure you have. Most people who watch a ball game, whether it's Johnny's T-ball game, or whether it's Auburn or Alabama or the Patriots or the Titans or whomever it may be, most people who go to a ball game, whether in person or on TV, they're pretty self-controlled. During the game, sure, they cheer, they support, you know, they get frustrated during the game, and, you know, they do have an emotional attachment to the events that are going on, but once the game is over, the game is over. And they leave the stadium, and, you know, it's like, well, we're disappointed, we lost, or hey, that was a great win, that's exciting. But really, the game on Saturday does not drastically alter their mood on Sunday. That's, I think, most people. But there are some people who cannot watch a ball game, either live or on the television, without screaming at the referees, shouting obscenities and profanity or otherwise poor word choices, throwing things at the television. Listen, if you have to go to Best Buy every Sunday and buy a new TV because you broke the one on Saturday throwing things at it, that's a problem. And there are events that can just bring out the worst in some people. And so if you can't control your temper during those ball games, and if you're just hurling insults and obscenities at people, maybe you need to stop watching ball games if it brings out the worst in you. What should you do? Well, you know the answer to the question. If that's what those events do to you, and it's not just sporting events. Let me give you another illustration just for balance. And by the way, don't start looking around saying, who's he talking about? You know, who's going to Best Buy every Sunday? I'm not talking about anybody in particular. What about concerts? Concerts. I like going to concerts. If it's a good artist, somebody that I enjoy listening to. But I will tell you, just from my own personal experience, there have been one or two concerts that I have gone to in great anticipation, looking forward to hearing this artist sing. And when I got there, maybe I learned that that artist has a filthy mouth. And the things that he or she says in between songs are not the things that I would want Jesus to hear had he gone to the concert with me. Or you go to this concert and you're just excited about the music that you're going to hear, and you're sitting in your seat and you're minding your own business, and then all of a sudden you realize that there's just a bunch of drunk people who are around you acting like fools, and you realize, you know, the kind of people that are here, probably not the kind of people that I need to be around. This is probably not the best place for me to be. Nothing wrong with going to a concert if the environment is good. But we've all been in situations similar to that, where we've gone somewhere with good intentions, and once we got there, we realized this is not a place for a Christian to be. We need to have that foresight to think, will this somehow encourage sinful behavior within me? Lead us not into temptation, Jesus said. And we need to pray that. Now here's question number four. Will this harm my influence for good? There's actually three or four sub-questions to this question, but this is kind of an umbrella question. Will this harm my influence for good? I'm going to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4. Notice what Paul says to Timothy in verse 12. Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Now, Paul singles out the idea of Timothy's youthfulness simply because of who he's writing to, but this is not saying that only young people need to be good examples, obviously. We all need to be good examples. So, am I being a good example to other people? What am I showing other people? What am I showing them when I recommend music to them, for instance? Hey, I found this good artist. I like a few of the songs that he sings. You should go check out this artist. What kind of example are we being when we recommend that music? We need to think about that. What kind of movies do we recommend? I share with you another personal experience. There was a movie that I watched a lot on TV when I was growing up. I didn't own the movie. Just watched it when it came on TV. I loved this movie. It's one of my favorites. I'm not going to tell you what it was. But I loved this movie. And when it came on TV, it was the edited version of the movie. It was extremely clean. And so I grew up watching this movie 1,000 times. I thought it was the greatest movie on earth. And so when I got a little bit older and I had a job and I had a little bit of money, I bought this movie, bought the DVD. I watched it. And I didn't realize that the movie was just laced with profanity. I didn't realize that what I watched all the time growing up was edited for the foul language. There was no foul language in it. But in the unedited version, there's a filthy word every 15 words. I had no idea. Now, against better judgment, I said to myself, keep the movie. Keep the movie. You know, I mean, you've seen it 100 times, more than that. You know, you can get past the language. No big deal. So I kept the movie. Well, later on, there was a gathering of Christians to watch a movie. And we're digging through our shelves and we're trying to pick out a movie to watch. And one of the young people that was there finds this particular movie, pulls it out, holds it up with this look on their face that said, why in the world do you have this movie? Threw it away that night. Because I realized, this is harming my influence on others. I should have thrown it away long before. What movies do we recommend? I said there were some sub-questions. Here's another one. Will my involvement in this activity encourage others to do wrong? Now, the passage that I want to use for this is 1 Corinthians chapter 8. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. First Corinthians 8, look with me at verse 9. But take care that this liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if someone sees you, who have knowledge, dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? Now, Paul would say in verse 13 then, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. Now, that may seem extreme to us, that I'm just going to stop doing something altogether because it might encourage sinful behavior in somebody else. I want to tell you, that's not extreme at all. That's loving your brother and your sister in Christ. And if my avoidance of something or some place or some activity means that my brother's conscience will not be offended, then I need to avoid that thing or place or activity. I need to do that for him because I don't want to hurt my influence for good by encouraging sinful behavior in him. Now here's another sub-question. Will my involvement in this activity harm God's purpose and God's character? If I do this, what is that going to say about the God whom I serve? The classic example is 2 Samuel 12 and verse 14. And this was after David's sin with Bathsheba and all of the bad decisions that David had made. And you remember Nathan comes to David and he says, David, your actions have given occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme his name. What you have done has brought shame and reproach upon your God. And the enemies of God, they're speaking blasphemous things about him because of what you did. So will my involvement in this harm God's purpose or God's character? And then here's the final sub-question. What if other people knew that I did this? What if others knew that I did this? Would it harm my influence for good? Are there behaviors that we can engage in that we would just rather nobody else know about? In the privacy of our home, no one else has to know. But what if they did? And this is true of both activities that are right and harmless and not sinful, but certainly also true of the ones that are. I know of a Christian man who loves to cook. I believe he used to cook in a restaurant, and he doesn't do that anymore, but he still loves to cook at home. And he used to cook a lot with wine. Some of you have probably done that before. That adds a distinct quality to your food. And he used to do that a lot, but he has since stopped doing that. And he did that primarily because he was worried about his influence on others. There were two things related to his influence that made him stop doing that. He said, number one, I always felt uncomfortable buying it at the store. You know, here I'm going through the store with my shopping cart and there's two bottles of wine sitting in there. And what if somebody I know, what if a Christian saw that? I'm going to have to explain, yeah, I'm not going to drink it. I'm using it to cook. And, you know, they're going to say, oh, yeah, right. I mean, he was worried about that. And rightfully so. He said, secondly, what if there's a Christian in my home who sees this bottle of wine in my refrigerator? How am I going to explain that to them? Listen, I'm not drinking it. I'm using it to cook. What are they going to think? So he said, I've just decided to just avoid the situation altogether because I don't want it to hurt my influence for good. I don't want people to reach false conclusions by making bad assumptions. And again, may not be anything inherently wrong with what we're doing, but if we're worried about our influence for good, then we need to avoid that behavior. These private behaviors, they certainly could be sinful behaviors, and we need to stop that, not only because of the reason of our influence, but we need to stop it for other obvious reasons as well. So, making godly decisions is a process. It's a process that involves at least these four questions. Is this forbidden? Will this offend my conscience? Will this encourage sinful behavior within me? And will it harm my influence for good? Serious questions we need to think about as we make all of our decisions every day. Thank you for bearing with me through this struggle with my voice, and you get to look forward to it again tonight, unless one of you has a secret remedy that you would be happy to share with me. I would be happy to take you up on it. There may be someone here this morning who needs to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are here to help you in whatever way we can do that. If you would, just come forward and make your request known as we sing together.